thank you everyone for coming. First off, as many of you saw, the Rav sent out a message last night to the entire Kehila. Obviously, would love to be here, but has some other obligations still. So he'll be back, Mirz Hashem, next week. But obviously, sends his best to the Chevra and looks forward to being back here with everybody. I just want to start off by thanking the sponsors for tonight's shiur. Yosef and Sarit Nyman, Jeremy and Rina Bienenfeld for continued Refuah Shleima for Jeremy's mother, Ruchama Chan Etel Bas Chava, an anonymous sponsor, Ruben and Rebecca Tepper, another anonymous sponsor, the Zchus Refuah Shleima for Yaakov and Sara, and also from Shani and Jason Salzberger. Tonight, as we officially launch the El Shir series, we are thrilled to welcome back Rabbi Leibowitz Shlita, a Rebbe to many of us in this room. As Rabbi Leibowitz just said, he loves coming here because he knows everybody in the room. So at Baruch Hashem, Rabbi Leibowitz has been a mainstay here as part of the El series throughout the years, and Baruch Hashem, we're very happy to have him back. Tonight we started saying the Perek of Tehillim of LeDavid, and in LeDavid we say the very famous pasuk Acha Sha'alti, which ends Shifti Beis Hashem Kol Yimei Chayai. I think Rabbi Leibowitz really lives his life embodying that pasuk in the Beis HaMedrash, the Beis HaKnesses, and of course disseminating Torah throughout the universe, you know, really throughout the universe, through Hawaii Torah, through the Daf Yomi. Obviously, we all know the godless of Rabbi Leibowitz. We were at a wedding together on Sunday, and Rabbi Leibowitz mentioned to me, he said, how fortuitous it is that this year, Rosh Chodesh El, Aleph El falls out on a Thursday night, and right away, Aleph El already, L'chol Adeos, Pes Tetzach Chuchavim, we're ready going and geared up into this El Shir series. So as we officially launch the El Zman here in BMZS, we are Baruch Hashem Rezocha to hear from Rabbi Leibowitz again. And we thank Rabbi Leibowitz tremendously for sharing his precious time with us. B'chavod Rav, Rabbi Leibowitz.
Thank you so much. Thank you. It is really, really great to be here with you. And Rabbi Tenenbaum texted me just a little while ago. He sends his love. He misses you. You should just appreciate how fortunate you are, you know, when you have a very, very young kehila of, you know, people who, I guess, in some ways probably a transient kehila, to have a rav of that stature and someone who really cares that much about each and every one of you and is someone who's really special in terms of not only being a wonderful Talmud Chacham, but in terms of his midos tovos and his sincerity. It's something that I'm sure you do treasure, but you should continue to treasure that and appreciate him. And that's, you know, what I always wanted to say, but he's always sitting right here, and so I'm kind of glad that he's not here, so I'm able to share that with you without feeling like terribly uncomfortable, knowing that he would be very angry. So it is Rosh Chodesh Elul, and Rosh Chodesh Elul is a time that, you know, in yeshiva, let's say in Eretz Yisrael, or when you're still in yeshiva, even in America, in some yeshivas in America, you get a certain sense that things are different, that something is changing, that something's coming up. The way our calendar works, you know, the kids are just finishing camp, and you know, it's vacation time, a lot of trips at the end of August. You know, it's not really, it's still like totally polo shirt season. You know, it's not, you don't really get the sense. Like, who's not going to have a barbecue on Sunday, right? Everyone's going to have a barbecue this Sunday and next Sunday and Monday, you know, so like, and that's going to be deep into Elul already, and we're still just going to be sort of in our relaxed state. And it's therefore really special to start running into Elul, jumping into Elul right at the beginning, because it is a very chashuv time. It is a very, very important time, and we can't squander it. I gave a shiur last year where someone just sent me my own shiur, which is kind of funny, but they sent me where the title, I don't remember what I spoke about, but the title was Elul is now, in caps, now. So they said that, you know, this is an appropriate shiur for right now. Didn't have a chance to listen. I'm sure it was great, but Elul is now. So let's talk a little bit about Elul, but not really about Elul per se. We'll back into Elul from the Parshas HaShavua. You know, one of the challenges and one of the problems that we have with a lot of Jewish texts that are available in English translation is that there are many Hebrew terms that are just not easily translatable. There are a lot of terms that just don't easily translate into one English word. Very often there's a depth to the Hebrew language where a certain phrase or word in Hebrew could actually mean five or six different things in English, and it's always difficult. I don't envy the job of those who have to translate for the variety of publishing houses that are engaged, that are involved in that work. So, like, for example, if somebody were to describe to you someone as being tamimistic, tamimistic. Now, tamimistic is a Yiddish word, but it's a takeoff of a Hebrew word, obviously, tamim. So someone's tamimistic. So what do you think? You know, if I get a phone call about a shidduch for one of my talmidim, happens every now and then, right? That and I say, he's very tamimistic. So to some people, that's like the biggest compliment you can give. And to other people, they're like, oh, that means like gullible, naive, foolish, right? Meaning that's the way they automatically translate in their minds. Now, might it mean that, you know, in modern Hebrew? Maybe that's what it means. That's certainly what it seems to mean in the Pashup Pshat of the Haggadah, right? When we describe the Tam, Echad Chacham, Echad Rasha, Echad Tam, Mazos, right? Meaning that he just doesn't know anything, doesn't seem to have much to say at all about anything. He seems to be very simple, very ignorant. It does not seem like it is a great compliment. But we know that it must be a great compliment, because there is a plethora of evidence. Is that a word? Plethora of evidence. It means, am I using it correctly? Okay, good. That the definition of that term as being simple-minded, naive, is either an incomplete definition or more likely just totally off base, a completely incorrect definition of the term. For example, in this week's parsha, the Torah commands us, Tamim tiyah im Hashem Elokecha. Torah says, you know what you need to be? You need to be a Tamim. Well, I need to be that guy in the Haggadah, the Mazos guy? I was hoping I could be the Chacham, you know, or at least the Rashi. He seems like he's having a good time, you know, but I should be that guy? I should be the Tamim? Tamim tiyeh im Hashem Elokecha. That a person is supposed to be Tamim. We must be Tamim. Not only that, Tamim with Hashem! So apparently there's some tamimus with Hashem also. So there's something about that also. And not only that, beyond that, we have one of the greatest biblical figures and one of the greatest of the Rishonim are described in this way. Yaakov Avinu is an ish tam, and there's one of the great Balei HaTosfos, Rabbeinu Yaakov, Rashi's grandson, has a nickname, pretty famous nickname. He's called Rabbeinu Tam. So apparently, Tam means something really, really good. But what exactly is it? How do we put our finger on what exactly Tam is? And it's unlikely that these are like uncomplimentary nicknames, you know, for Yaakov Avinu and for Rabbeinu Yaakov, who's called Rabbeinu Tam, because not only because of the stature of the people that we're describing, but you know, you're not allowed to give uncomplimentary nicknames. It would be against a halacha. The Gemara Masechet Bava Metzia, Daf Nun Ches, the Gemara tells us, Amar Rabbi Chanina, Kol Yordim LaGehenim Olim. Anyone who goes down to Gehenim will come out eventually. Chutz Mishlosha. Except for three people. If you want to know how do you earn a one-way ticket to Gehenim, here's how you do it. I get it. Also pretty bad. The Gemara says that's Yarek Valyavar. And if you come up with an uncomplimentary nickname for somebody. So there's no way that the word Tam, that Rabbeinu Tam is some sort of uncomplimentary nickname, that we're just making fun of him in some way or another. It just can't be. It's not shaykh. It's not even so posh that you're allowed to give a complimentary nickname to somebody. That's likely usher as well. That's one of my favorite shuvas, one of my favorite shaylas. Someone once asked, I think, the Ben Ish Chai in the Tshuvas Rav Paul, and they asked him, there was a guy named Chaim, and another guy named Chaim in the same shul, and they didn't know how to differentiate them. So one of them was very tall, and they wanted to know, can they call him Chaim Aruchim? So as a just as a differentiator. So, or is that like a violation of giving a nickname that you're not allowed to give? So my Chavrusa Rav Razner Shlita, in his Sefer on Chumash, quotes Rabbi Steinsaltz, who explains that the word Tamim is actually a combination of two different things, of two different ideas. It's a combination of contentment and receptiveness. Contentment and receptiveness. And let's take each one at a time. as far as the idea of contentment is concerned, being content, the context of the mitzvah of Tamim Tia Im Hashem Elokecha sheds a lot of light on this. The lead up to that mitzvah, Tamim Tia Hashem Elokecha, is the iser to follow the abominable practices of the nations who previously inhabited Eretz Yisrael before we got there. Who called it abominable practices? The Torah, Toeva, right? If the Torah calls it a Toeva, that means really bad. I mean, people are very often are in the habit of thinking there's only one thing in the Torah that's called Toeva. Not true. There are several things in the Torah that are called Toeva, but at the end of the day, it's obviously not a compliment, meaning all of those things are what HaKadosh Baruch Hu refers to as Toeva, but the abominable practices of the nations that had previously inhabited Eretz Yisrael. You shouldn't be kosim ksamim, ma'onein, minachesh, mechashef, you shouldn't be chover chover, shoel ov v'yadoni, doresh es hamesim, meaning all of these types of sorcery and all the... Rather, tamim tia im Hashem Elokecha. When a person seeks information from, I don't know, I hope I get this right, word right, necromancers. I typed it in and it didn't, spell check didn't change it. So I assume that actually is a word, right? When a person seeks information from these kinds of sources and, you know, fortune tellers and things like that, and we're not content with the information that our Kodesh Baruch Hu made available to us, that is a violation of Tamim Tia Im Hashem Elokecha. To be content with what Hashem gave us, what Hashem, not just in terms of physical things that Hashem gave us, but in terms of a capacity that Hashem gave us. Hashem told us, live your life a certain way without having to know everything, without having to know every detail of what the future holds. You're never going to know that anyway. Rabbi Reisman likes to say that, he said, I'm not a Navi, but one thing I could be, I could say a Navua at every single chuppah. I was just at a chuppah an hour ago. I could say a Navua at every single chuppah. The chassan and the kala, standing under the chuppah, have a certain vision, a certain view of how their life is going to go. He says, I can say with absolute certainty, their life will not go that way. In some cases, it will be better. In some cases, it will be worse. In most cases, it will be a combination of better and worse. But it will not go. It will not go that way. Life comes with surprises. It always did, and it always will. That's the way of the world. A person is going to try to get ahead of all that. A person is going to try to outsmart that system. He's going to try to figure out a way where, oh, I need to know the future. He's going to go to all sorts of fortune tellers. No, if you're not content with living your life of Torah and mitzvos, and instead you feel the need to explore exciting points of connectivity that aren't really part of what HaKadosh Baruch Hu envisioned for Torah and mitzvos, well, then you're not doing it right. When Shaul HaMelech wasn't getting the answers he needed from the Urim V'Tumim, he chose to consult with a witch. That was a violation of Tamim Tia Im Hashem Elokecha. I heard from my friend Rabbi Shai Schechter once, I think in the name of the Geri Rebbe, that, let's put it this way, let's say this Dvar Torah in this way. There is a famous Medrash, where the Medrash says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu went around to all the nations of the world and asked them if they want the Torah. In the lead up to Matan Torah, that's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu did. And each one, of course, said Maksiv Ba, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu responded with whatever would be most challenging for them. Right, that was how Hashem responded to whatever is going to be most difficult for them to hear, and therefore they all rejected, and they all said no. So the question is, how come Hashem didn't do that with us? So the simple answer is, well, we said Nasa V'Nishma. Okay, fine. He didn't have a chance to say it with us, but he must have been prepared with something. Right? There must have been some, you know, if we were going to say Maksivba, he must have had something that we were going to find impossible, that he was going to say, oh, this is going to kill the Jewish people. You know, they're never going to go for it if I tell them this. We used to, in DRS, we used to take an 11th grade trip, and one of the stops was, I think it was before all of your times even, one of the stops was Rav Matisyahu Solomon in Lakewood. Was it before your time? You did? Ah. So I'm sure you remember that Rav Matisyahu Solomon asked this kasha, and he said that what would HaKadosh Baruch Hu have ready for Klal Yisrael? What answers did he have? He said he would have said Lashon Hara, for sure. Because we love to talk. We love talking. So in Lashon Hara, we would have ran the other way. But thank God, we said Nasa V'Nishma. So says the Geri Rebbe, no, HaKadosh Baruch Hu actually did tell us something that was impossible, because there was one sivoy that that he gave us before, right before Kabbalah Satorah, to Hagbel Esahar, that you're not allowed to go beyond a certain point, that there are barriers that are set up, and that you're not allowed to go past that barriers. How well do Jews work with that, right? They get one of those light up jackets that say some, you know, nice Jewish Hatzalah Chaverim or whatever. I don't know how to save a life. I'm not anybody's chaver, but I'm a hacker. I know the right guy. I know, you know, so I can, and when I have that, I can get past. That's for other people, but I'm able to get past the barriers. A Jewish person, you tell them, you know, that you can know this much, you can go this far. So, yeah, okay, fine. You know, like, go tell somebody else. You know, like, we're not very good at like limiting ourselves. You know, when sometimes you find out, Rahman al-Son, someone is ill. Listen, the family doesn't want to talk about it. I'll find out, but everyone's going to be the exception. Who's going to find out? It's our nature, and that's what Hakadosh Baruch Hu told us. You're only allowed to go up to here. You're not allowed to go past it. And we listened, so we actually did our maksivba, and we actually fulfilled it. And that's why Hakadosh Baruch Hu gave us the Torah. There is a certain amount of contentment that is very hard for us, but we need to work on. We need to work on that idea of there's a certain amount that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to know, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to seek out and to look for, and tamim tiyeh, im Hashem Elokecha, we seek out only that which we're supposed to seek out. We seek out a greater knowledge of Torah. We seek out ways to do chesed and to do mitzvos. That's what we seek out. We don't seek out more hak to be able to talk about what's going on behind closed doors in that person's house or that person's house. We don't seek out things that are beyond what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to know. The second definition of tamim is that to be receptive, to be accepting. Now, what does that mean? It doesn't mean that we're just totally pariv and bland about everything, that we're completely receptive to everything that happens around us and we have no opinion about anything. It doesn't mean that a person who's a tam, is someone who mamish has no opinions about anything on earth. No, the word accepting means to be receptive and understanding. Meaning, a lot of times, when I do chasm classes with guys, so we'll talk a little bit about Shalom Bayis. So one of the things that we talk about is the idea of being mevater, right? That your wife wants something and you want something else. And there's a big maila to be mevater, to know that we always say the famous line. It sounds trite and canned, but it's just emes la mito shel Torah, and that is that a happy wife makes for a happy life. So you know you're not going to be mevater. She's not going to be happy. It means you lost. It means you're not going to be happy either. So what does it mean to so a lot of guys will, you know, sometimes guys don't ask questions, but you know, because I see, you know, the struggling, you have to pull out the questions, and sometimes guys are like very willing to ask questions. A lot of guys struggle with this. They're like, what do you mean? I'm not allowed to ever express an opinion? Like every time there's anything that she says, it's just automatically she wins and automatically she goes. You know, they tell the story of Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach that at his wife's levaya, it is documented. There are a few stories I tell about Rav Shlomo Zalman, one of which Rabbi Teller calls me up to tell me it's not true, but I think this one he calls me up to tell me is true. That Rav Shlomo Zalman at his wife's levaya said that after whatever it was, 60 years of marriage, even though the minhag is that you're supposed to ask mechila at a levaya of the nifter, after 6 years of marriage, he has nothing for which to ask mechila. So my friend Rabbi David Rossman always adds, yeah, but they don't tell the PS to that story. The PS to that story afterwards, one of the Talmidim went over to Rav Shlomo Zalman after the Shiva or something and said, it's so amazing that the Rosh Shiva never disagreed with his wife about anything. And Rav Shlomo Zalman was like, whoa, hold up. I don't think he spoke like that, but he said like what? Where did you get the impression that I never disagreed with my wife about anything? So, well, you said at the Levaya that you have nothing for which to ask Mechila. He said, yeah, we knew how to disagree. meaning I didn't disagree in a demeaning way, in an insulting way. I never spoke down to her. We spoke with respect toward each other, but I knew how to disagree. Meaning you know what's really frustrating for a woman? A woman says, okay, we need a new couch, and I narrowed it down to two choices. She really made the husband's job as easy as it possibly could be, right? There are 1,000 things to choose from. She narrowed it down, she did all the research, and she says, honey, do you like couch A or couch B? And what is, he's a good husband, so he wants to do the right thing. So what does he always say? Whatever you want, I don't really care. I'll fall asleep on anything. I'll fall asleep on the table, I'll fall asleep under the table. I don't care, you know? So and that leaves her feeling a little empty. Like, I asked for your opinion, not because I wanted you to say you don't care, because I actually wanted your opinion. Now, if he says, this couch, and if it's that one, I'm never coming home. Now, that's also not appropriate, right? Meaning the proper way to express it might be something along the lines of, wow, you narrowed it down to two great options, and either one would be fantastic. That one looks like, you know, a little nicer to me, but whatever you choose is great. So that way you've expressed your opinion. She can choose to ignore it or not. And that's, but that's, it doesn't mean not to have an opinion. It means many times, you know, when we have conversations or debates with other people, there's a significant lack of acceptance of even really hearing the other side. We've made up our minds on an issue before we even began the conversation. We're not really willing to listen to arguments on the other side. And that's actually, I just summarized pretty much in a sentence, all of political discourse in this country, right? Meaning that everyone already knows what they believe, and no one cares to really hear the other side. Meaning, how does the expression go? That when a Jew is silent, he's not listening, he's waiting, right? Meaning, I'm just waiting to express my rebuttal. I'm not listening. Not everything is a personal attack. We have to be careful to actually listen. When a person listens to somebody else, it's important to listen on a deep level. The term listening has many, many different levels. Sometimes we just hear, and we assume that means we are listening. We confuse the two. We confuse hearing with listening. Your wife says, you're not listening to me, and you defend yourself by saying, yes, I am. I can repeat every single word you just said. Right, and then you repeat back the last line, because that's what you remember. You repeat back the last line. That's a very, very low level of listening. I remember once I was checking emails after a long day in my office at home, and my wife came into the room, and she said, oh, you're here. Okay, good. I need you to do 3 things for me. I need you to go pick up Daniil from here, and I need you to go to Gourmet Glad, or whatever the 3rd thing was. So, okay. And I said, uh-huh. And then she left. And then she came back like a half hour later. She's like, what are you still doing here? And I said, I live here. Like, what are you talking about? And she said, I told you a half hour ago. You said, uh-huh. You said, yes. But what was happening? Like, I wasn't listening. I mean, I knew that there was a noise that was disrupting my email checking and responding. And I also knew, subconsciously, without even really hearing, that the way to make that noise go away is to say, uh-huh. So I said, uh-huh, and the noise went away. But that's not listening. Listening means that you're actually opening yourself up to hear what another person is saying. There's another level of listening, which isn't just that the very lowest level where I can repeat the words you said. It involves identifying with the person who's communicating with you. To be tamim, it means to be receptive. It means to be open to really hearing what's being said. For example, my wife says, I'm so tired. So my first reaction is, me too. I didn't sleep well at all last night, which is my way of saying, I'm even more tired than you, I win. Right? Meaning we've opened a competition. People do this when they're Menachem Avel. Oh, you think that's bad? You should know how my such and such died. You know, like, what? Really? Like, the person is sitting Shiva. You see it all the time. There's like this natural, everything has to be filtered through what's going on in my life and in my existence. You know, in other words, if your response is, I'm also tired, it's, I'm not hearing what you're trying to make me understand. I mean, you're trying to make me understand something that you're feeling, and instead, I view it as you stating a certain fact about exhaustion, and once you've expressed that fact about exhaustion, I have what to respond to that. If I were to say, I figured you must be exhausted because you've been working so hard lately and you have so much on your head, then I listened and I've been receptive. Then I've actually heard what she was saying. Even if I don't say anything, I just respond by, I don't know, getting up and doing the dishes. So then I have said, I not only heard your message, I accept your message. You know, a lot of times, and this is, I tell Chassanim all the time, this is the kind of thing that, like, no matter how many times you hear it, you will have to fight with every fiber of your being to avoid this tendency, because it's so ingrained in us. Your wife comes home and she says, I have a headache. And you've heard a thousand times, that your wife doesn't need you to solve her problems. She doesn't need you to solve her problems. And yet, the first thing out of your mouth, the first words that are going to jump off of your tongue, unless you stop yourself, are, did you take, I prefer Advil, did you take Tylenol? She knows that Advil exists. She even knows what it does. She knows that, you know, what it treats. You are not being mechadesh anything to her. Rabbi Reisman, you know, once said, no woman in the history of humanity ever married a man because he gives such good eitzas. That has never, ever happened in the history of humanity. So if someone tells you, be it your wife or any, man, it must be very, very hard to go through a day with a headache like that. And, you know, just, I hear you. I hear that you're expressing something. Rabbi Reisman said that one of his Talmidim came and said, I'm pretty sure my wife is a hypochondriac. And he said, well, why? He said, Sunday she comes home, suddenly she has a headache. Monday she comes home, she tells me she has a stomachache. Tuesday her leg hurts. So he said, well, what did you say? He said, well, on Sunday I told her to take Advil. On Monday I told her, you know, a warm compress or whatever, you know. He said, no, whatever it is, it must be so difficult to actually listen to what the other person is trying to tell you. If Steinsaltz uses the lead up to Matan Torah that we referred to before as an example of a contrast between a true Tamim and those that are not Tamim. What was the lead up to Matan Torah? That HaKadosh Baruch Hu goes to all of the nations and he says, you know, you want the Torah? Would you like the Torah? And when the nations of the world are offered the Torah, laden with many mitzvos, their first reaction is Maksivba. Now, if they were truly listening to Hashem, they would have heard that the Creator has offered a treasure that he wants to share. And when you hear that the Creator of the world has offered a treasure, that a treasure from Mibeis Kenazav, that he's willing to share with humanity, and he thinks it's so important that he calls the contents of it mitzvos, commandments. That's how important it is to the Creator of you, to the Creator of all of us. And the first reaction is, Maksivba. That's a very low level of listening. That's, I'm even more tired than you. That's the kind of listening that's involved. It shows that we haven't been at all receptive. When Klal Yisrael says, Nasa v'nishma, we're saying that we get it, that we understand that you're trying to give us a treasure, and we're so eager to accept and then to learn more. That's tamimus. It happens to me to be that definition of tamimus fits very nicely with the Ben Tam in the Haggadah at the Seder. He's a blank canvas. You know, wide open, no preconceived notions, no knowledge of Eidos and Chukim and Mishpat and what everything is all about. Just whatever you tell me, that's what I will know, that's what I will internalize. And that's the definition on a certain level of Tamimah. So bringing it back to Chodesh Elul. Chodesh Elul is a time of many, many great messages. This is the first of many, many drushas and Musar Shmuzin and Shiurim that you'll hear throughout Chodesh Elul. And we go out of our way to do it. It's a Thursday night. It's not an easy night to be out. You know, a few guys told me that I just worked a 12-hour shift it's not easy. It's not easy to be here. But it's Elul, so for Elul you come. But the question is, are we listening? What we often hear, Musar Shmuzin and inspirational messages couched in a good vart, and we heard them. I could even repeat the vart, because it was such a good vart sometimes that I heard, that it's so sharp, and next time at a Shabbos table, I'll be able to repeat the vart. But what level of listening does that involve? to hear enough to be able to say over the Vart, oh, Hagbel Sahar, you know, I believe it said in the name of Shai Shechter, that Rav Shai Shechter, that it means, like, you know, don't be such a hacker, you know. That's a great Vart, right? I could say it over. But, you know, as soon as I hear that something's going on by the neighbor, you know, I'm going to be doing the same thing. How much listening is really involved? You have to make sure that Chodesh Elul is a time of high-level listening. The need for inspiration in Elul requires that we accept with tamimus, that we're cognizant of how these messages have the capacity to change us. And therefore, during Chodesh Elul, it's Minag Yisrael that we take upon ourselves new Kabbalos, new things to do. I mean, the real Minag is Asar Simei Tshuva, but we should extend it and we should expand it throughout Chodesh Elul. You know, Asar Simei Tshuva, it's Chumras. Okay, I'm not talking about Chumras. A Kabbalah for 40 days. I have 40 days between now and when I'm standing in the Ila at Yom Kippur. And I'll be able to tell the Ribbono Shel Olam, I did something concrete, something real, something substantive, because Elul wasn't just a time of like great speeches where I hear really good stories in the drushas that I hear. It's not just a time where the speeches are 25% better than they are the rest of the year, right? It's more entertaining. It's a time where I'm really ready and willing to do something different. Now, the trap that many rabbis fall into is we give a message like that, and then we don't tell you any ideas of like what to do different. So I would like to share with you ideas of what to do different. Someone asked me recently, he said, you know, you have all these things from Rabbi Reisman, all these little eitzes and tefillah and this and that. You ever like collect them and put them all together? So I sat down today and I collected, you know, I whatever came to my head. I have like 13, 14 different things, but I'm just not thinking clearly. Over the next week or so, I'll put it together. Let me share with you six ideas. I'm not asking you to do six things. I'm not even asking you to do any one of these. But just to get your brain working of something that could be a Kabbalah for the next 40 days. I'd like to share with you two ideas. Am I over time already? Was I supposed to stop? No, okay, really just a few more minutes. Two ideas in tefillah, two ideas in Torah, and two ideas in general mitzvahs. In tefillah, Rabbi Reisman said in the name of Rav Palm that it's a really good idea when you're benching and you're saying no delicha, the paragraph of no delicha. There are a whole bunch of alts in no delicha. There are a whole bunch of things. All this, all that. I am grateful to you, Akadosh Baruch Hu, for this, for this, for this, for this. When you're saying them, just count them out on your fingers. Every al. Just count them out. It will be much easier to concentrate and to realize that you're actually asking for a number of things. My shtick is, I'm not going to tell you how many there are. You have to report back to me how many there are. Okay? Sometimes you're not going to get all of them because you're only going to remember to start counting them out when you're already three deep, right? But that's okay. You'll at least get the next however many, right? Meaning you'll get something. By the way, it works in modim also, that there are several owls at the end of modim. A simple, it's the simplest thing in the world. You're benching anyway, I think, right? It's the simplest thing in the world. Just count it out on your fingers as you're doing it. A second eitzah for tefillah. Again, all of these are from Rabbi Yisrael Reisman Shlita. He's very good at like finding like good doable eitzahs that you could. He's good at a lot of things, but that's one of the things he's very good at. An eitzah for tefillah. Rabbi Reisman said that every year he tries to take three words of Shemona Esrei and make those his words that he's going to focus on that year. That his kavana in these three words of Shemona Esrei is going to be different this year. He said someone criticized him because, like, when are you ever going to get kavana in the entire Shemona Esrei? He's like, how long I live is up to God. You know, I'm going to take three words at a time, and I'm going to hope I make it to the end. You know, I'm going to hope. You know, but that's up to the Ribbono Shel Olam. I'm giving him more reason to keep me alive for longer. Don't take only one word. Take three words. I'll tell you for myself. For this past year, last Yom Noraim, I started. It changed a lot of my Shemona Esrei. I chose Erev Avoker V'Tzarayim. Why Erev Avoker V'Tzarayim? Because I happen to live life in three different arenas. It's just the way my life is structured. Everything is broken down into three parts, which is kind of ironic for me because every drush I have starts with three questions. I don't know. It's just I always think in threes. But my life is broken down into there's my family life, which is usually in the evening when I'm home. Just kidding, never really. But you know, but in theory, you know, there's my shul life. Every morning, I'm in the shul, you know, preparing the daf, giving the daf, davening in the shul, and so that's boker. And then there's tzaraim. I'm in yeshiva all day. I'm in yeshiva the rest of the day. So I think of the brachos. It's in modim. We're thanking Hashem. So I'm thinking of the brachos that I have in erev, in boker, and in tzaraim. And I'm davening HaKadosh Baruch Hu should continue those brachos. So that worked for me. For you, it may be a different three words. It may be a different, right? It may be three words in, you know, very often if there's someone ill, then it's in Rifa'enu. If there's someone, you know, suffering with Shalom Bayis problems, Sim Shalom. I don't know, whatever the words are, find three words. That at least, and I'm not telling for the whole year. For Elul. For the next 40 days. That's in Tefillah. Two ideas in Torah. So the first one is really hard for people your age. Easier for people my age. Rabbi Reisman pointed out that like in December, on Shabbos afternoon, what time are you going to make it to shul for mincha in December? I don't know, probably 4 o'clock, whatever mincha is. What changes in June or July or August? Meaning shachar starts the same time, it ends the same time. Your meal takes the same amount of time. Your nap, in theory, should be the same amount of time. Why is it that we can't make it back to shul until 7:45 in July, if we were able to make it back to shul at 4 o'clock? It's a lot to ask. 3 hours and 45 minutes of learning, but at least something, you know? So when you're my age and your kids are all grown up and you don't have to be helping with childcare and everything else and doing those kinds of things of responsibilities, so then I will grant you it's much easier. I have no problem getting back to my shul at 4 o'clock after finishing my meal, having a nap, the whole, you know, I have no problem. But something. Does it really have to be till 7:45? Especially if you have a little kid, the kid's been asleep since 6:30, right? So come to shul early and learn. Second, similar idea in Talmud Torah, you come to Mincha Maariv. You know, again, everyone's family situation is different, depending if your wife is home, she's not home, if you have a kid, you don't have a kid. You come to Mincha Maariv. Let's assume those nights or those situations where there's nothing that you're really going to, meaning when you're going home, it's just to sit around. When you don't have really anything on the agenda. Stay another 10 minutes. Open up a chumash. Open up a something for 10 more minutes. You know, that's a shifty b'veis Hashem kol yemei chayai. That's what we daven for. To be able to be sitting in the beis Hashem. So you have an opportunity. Stay in the beis Hashem for a few more minutes. When you do. You don't always have that opportunity, but when you do. And then two things in the area of mitzvahs. One thing in the area of mitzvahs is to aim for low-hanging fruit. There are certain things that we do anyway most of the time, but we just don't think of it as a mitzvah. And all you need to do is start focusing on it as a mitzvah, and then it becomes a mitzvah, and you'll be more makbid to do it all the time. I'll give you a really easy one. Malava Malka. Half the Motzai Shabbos, you're anyway going to be having pizza, right, or something. So instead of it just being, oh, I'm a glutton, so I'm having pizza after I just ate all day, it could be, well, I'm actually being makbid on a siman in Shulchan Aruch. I'm being makbid about Malava Malka. And even those Matzoy Shabbos where it's like, I really don't want to eat, I'm on a new diet, I'm trying to live, okay. Something, a little Malava Malka. It's an easy one. Another one, and with this one I'll close, relating to just mitzvahs and interactions in general. To express kindness to other people at least once a day, verbally. A lot of times men are not so good at this. We know what we feel sometimes. We're not very good at expressing what we feel. Rabbi Reisman tells the Maisa, which became instantly, as soon as he said it, my favorite Maisa, that he had a Talmud that was having Shalom Bayis problems, and the couple came to meet with him, and the wife said, Rebbe, he never, ever tells me that he loves me. And the guy said, I don't understand. When we were engaged, I told her that I love her. Until further notice. Right? A shaita, right? Until further notice. Meaning, sometimes, even if you feel something, it's not enough to feel it. It needs to be expressed also. And that's in any Ben Adam L'Chaveru situation. Just give someone when Rabbi Mohn was in my shul for a Shabbos this past year, I basically asked him for low-hanging fruit. I said, what's a simple mitzvah d'oraisa that everybody would do if they would just think of doing it, but just people don't think of it enough, so they don't do it. But it would be so easy. He said, it's a kiyum d'oraisa v'yahavtal re'acha kamocha to give someone a compliment. To say so to someone, wow, you know, you're so smart. That was so clever. You look great. That was anything complimentary. It's a kiyum d'oraisa v'yahavtal re'acha kamocha to do that. So once a day, you know, make sure you get it done early so that you won't have it on your head all day. Right? Once a day for 40 days. Something concrete. I'm a hinni mucher mezuman l'kayim mitzvah seishal after the reach kamocha. By the way, you all look great. It's wonderful to see all of you. Check, it's not midnight yet. Okay, so one day down, 39 to go for me, right? But that's all it is. The idea of tanitia mashem alakecha, again, I think a certain sense of contentment in how much yenting we do, but also a certain sense of receptiveness, a certain sense of being able to be shomeya. And when we say the bracha, and when we hear the bracha of lishmoa kol shofar, we know what it's going to mean. We know what shmiya actually means. We know that it means to actually internalize, and by then we'll have had a track record of actually doing so. I wish you all a very successful Chodesh Elul, a wonderful Shabbos, and a chesiv v'chesiv v'tovah.